Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Audible is the home of storytelling, and it lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love or something new to discover. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. In fact, I've been really into thrillers and true crime lately, and I just got back from a long car trip where I was listening to the latest zombie Fallout book, Bridging the Gap. And I swear, I had to keep checking the back seat for any glowing eyes as I drove home on that deserted highway. In fact, on so many of my journeys, Audible is there for me, with comedy, bestsellers, history, exclusive originals, and more. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/built or text BUILT to 500-500. That's audible.com/built or text BUILT to 500-500. We've all been there. Maybe we used one or two misleading words in a shared document, and then the whole team spends a lot of wasted time trying to get on the same page. But we don't need to make those mistakes. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all of the wasted time and money that goes with it. I spend a lot of time writing. I write scripts, emails, speeches, proposals, you name it. And Grammarly helps me find the right tone. It does so much more than correct grammar. It's almost like a trusted writing partner. And when every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. Teams that communicate better with Grammarly report 52% less time spent writing sales emails and 66% less time spent editing marketing content. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Hey, everyone. Want to grow your business faster and stronger? Wondering how to find and keep top talent? Well, it starts with your company culture. Your company's identity and operations depend on the culture you create. Fortunately, there's Insperity, a leading HR provider. Their specialists show you how to build a culture aligned with your business goals, driving success. Download their free ebook, The Future of Business is Culture, at Insperity.com for ways to create a culture that fuels growth. With the right people, processes, and values in place, your company can realize its full potential. Visit Insperity.com to see how Insperity provides HR that makes a difference. Hey, everyone, and welcome to How I Built This Resilience Edition. On these episodes, we're talking with entrepreneurs and other interesting people about how to think creatively during this really disruptive moment. And today, we're going to hear from Samantha Bee, the host and creator of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Samantha's been quarantining at her home outside of New York with her kids and her husband, Jason Jones, who's also an executive producer on the show. Writing and producing a show remotely has been a learning experience for Samantha and her staff, but it's allowed them to rethink the production process. Samantha spoke to me from her apartment in New York City, where she returned just in time for our conversation. I know you've been filming the show from upstate New York in your backyard. You are now in your apartment in Manhattan. Like, I think you just got there, right?
Well, the tropical storm last week knocked out power to our house, and we do not have power yet at the house. We don't have power, and we don't have internet. And today we'll make it, like, officially. I think we're passing the 1 week mark since we've had power or internet. So we came into the city where we also have questionable internet. So I hope that it works.
Is there any talk about when the show might go back to the studio?
We are constantly talking about it, but there doesn't seem to be any movement in that direction, which is really fine for now. And it's fine for September. It is not as fine for October, November, December, January, February. So, you know, our studio is a huge shared space. We literally share our studio space with John Oliver's show and a Dr. Oz show. And so it's much more difficult. We don't control our own environment. So it's going to be very difficult for us to go back to the studio. So we're there's about 10 different scenarios that we're kind of juggling for how to move the show forward into inclement weather or freezing cold. We'll see.
You have a team, a big team that produces the show, I think like 70 people. So first of all, how have you been managing that? And how has your team been managing through this?
I think, you know, everybody's been doing incredible work, you know, in the most anxiety riddled of circumstances. Everybody has their own personal life that they're also bringing to the table every day, which everybody's really frightened, and people live with varying degrees of privacy. I mean, we have lots of young people on staff who have roommates, and everybody's kind of clustered in small apartments. So it's really difficult to not have a central place to go and make the show. We all can work very independently. We've proven that. I think the social stress is pretty acute. It's not that you have to be together to do this show, but we prefer to be together. And so that part has actually been, I think, pretty stressful.
When was it clear that this thing was real and scary? And when did you decide to just go for it and just start filming from home? Like, how did you guys come to that decision?
I think that really March 11th, March 12th was a really critical period where a lot of people all at the same time realized that something big was really happening. And that was the moment when we got kicked out of our studio, basically. We shot our last show, I think, on March 11th. But the building kind of closed around us because they had found a couple of COVID cases in the building itself. And so they were evacuating the building as we were taping the show. And that moment, really, we knew that we would not be in the studio the following week. Everything started to shut down around us. And so we really advised people. We were like, grab your stuff, grab what you need, and go. And we did the same. Jason and I, we packed a suitcase, not really knowing that we would shoot the show in at our house. I didn't do a good job packing. I packed like 5 blazers and a bunch of high-heeled shoes. Like, I just panic shopped my apartment. And as we were up there for a couple of days, we really had no plan except, could we possibly shoot the show from up here? Like, I don't know. But then after a couple of days up there, Jason and I decided to just start shooting stuff just because we wanted to mark the moment where we were just living up there. And what if I was like a woodswoman living in the shack behind our behind our garden? And so we just started shooting stuff, and it really turned out to be a proof of concept to the network that we could shoot in our backyard and that it would look good and that it could be broadcast quality, even though it's shot on an iPhone. We very quickly made the decision to shoot outside so that we wouldn't need lights, so that we could just have use the light of the sun, because we thought, okay, we'll just use this big golden ball that's in the sky. That'll light everything. That'll be cheap. And that's how it started. And then it just grew and grew over the course of days to where it really seemed possible. So then we just tried to make a show, and it worked.
I mean, you've been like, you've used your kids' iPads as teleprompters.
Oh, and that has not changed. That has remained stable. I still use my daughter's iPad as, there's a teleprompter app that I use. It works great. I clip it to a stand. I run it myself. It's a very DIY kind of experience. But, you know, Jason and I come from the world of sketch, which is totally DIY. And we've always been that way as a couple, making movies in our house and doing stuff like that. It's one of those full circle moments.
How has it been for you to, you know, not performing in front of an audience? Like, you know, you make a joke and you wonder, is anybody laughing or watching? Like, how are you managing that? Are you just...
I don't come from a stand-up background. It's natural for me to work the crowd in my way of doing live-to-tape performance. And I certainly learned how to do that working at The Daily Show for a really long time. So I'm really good at it. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that back and forth with the audience. I really enjoy that kind of communion with them. But I don't need it. I think I don't need it. Like, I think I have a good sense of what the rhythm of the show is without them. And if it's not safe to have an audience and it's just not prudent to do that, I love our audience. I don't want to put them at risk, and I don't want to put our crew at risk. So we're not going to have an audience for a really long time. Really, who knows? If I recall correctly, when I started this show, I didn't really want to have a live audience. I didn't think it was necessary for what I wanted to do. In the end, I did decide to have a live studio audience, and it was really great. And I got a lot out of it. And I really enjoyed meeting people because I really, really do enjoy that. But I can easily go back to not having an audience because I do feel the audience somewhat. It's fine to do the show in the forest. It's a little weird to do it just for my husband because he's wildly supportive. He's like my biggest fan. Of course, we've been married for 20 years. But also he will tell me when I do something badly and he is not afraid. He is not shy about telling me when I'm doing something wrong or I could do something better or I can improve. So it's very much a back and forth between the two of us. And our kids are there sometimes because they're holding equipment. If they're willing to do it, which they are not often willing to do it because it's kind of, it's really boring for them, but it's really helpful when they help us. It's actually really great. So that part is daunting. And then it's also daunting to do Zoom meetings. So we're having like these big meetings, like staff-wide meetings. But if you're looking at your own, if you're looking at the other person in your computer or you're looking at yourself, you're not really relating to other people. So you're really only relating to people through this like dot in your computer. Because you're not really looking at anyone. You're just talking to a dot, which it's not ideal. It's not ideal.
I want to ask you about those meetings. Do you guys have a daily staff meeting, like a daily Zoom meeting?
I don't have a daily staff meeting with everyone, but there are daily meetings for sure across departments. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with this. And I've asked people who've come on the show about this because it is, in a sense, a way to connect. And it's a way for everybody to see each other and just to see faces. It's a little bit awkward when you're kind of staring into this green dot on your computer.
Yes, it's not ideal. I don't like it. I don't think there's anyone at work who likes it. It does feel awkward. Like, you know, usually I'm talking and it feels like I'm monologuing. Do you know there's no back and forth? You're just not seeing the nuance. Like you're not seeing the micro expressions on people's faces and they're not really catching your body language. And I start to ramble because I'm trying to fill space because no one's really like, there's no give and take. Lots of people mute their microphones because they're like rattling bags or they have kids who are homeschooling and it's nice and it's respectful, but at some point I was like, please stop muting. I'd really rather hear the crunching bag or something than just like silence.
Is there anything about the approach that you've taken these past few months, like where you couldn't focus on like perfect lighting or a perfect set or you just had to do it? Is there anything about that approach that eventually you want to take back or that you will take back with you when you are in a more controlled environment?
I think so. There are ways that we have changed the process of taping that make sense for me to continue. Like normally we would, if we were in the studio, by way of example, on a normal Wednesday, we would do a rehearsal, a full rehearsal of the show around noon, 12:30, something like that. And then we do a long huddle, like a 3-hour huddle where we rewrite the show. Because often a joke is so funny and it looks great on the page. But when you say it out loud in a big, huge studio space, it just doesn't land the way you want it to, or I don't nail it or something. And we're like, let's tweak that. So we make all of these little tweaks and adjustments. And then of course the audience comes in and then our performance is very much for the audience. Like there's a community experience of it and you're kind of surfing the wave of their enthusiasm. It's a totally different type of experience. So adjusting the show, we have to tape on Tuesday because the edit process takes an immense amount of time. It's a totally different experience of editing. So we have to do it a day before so we don't have an opportunity to add jokes Wednesday morning or Wednesday at 4:00. If something happens in the news, we can't quite pivot that quickly. But I don't regret that. I can see now that maybe we don't need to do it that way. Maybe giving ourselves a day in between is a perfectly fine way. What I'm saying is I've missed the community of it and I missed the rewrite because it's really rollicking and fun and graphics is changing things and we're making all these changes. I miss that enthusiasm and that moment where we're all in the grind together. I miss being together with people, but I don't really miss the actual technical aspect of it. And so I think we'll bring that back when we're in a more normal situation, but who knows really when that will be.
When we come back in just a moment, Samantha answers some audience questions and talks about the future of television production. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to How I Built This, Resilience Edition from NPR. Here on our show, we bring you tales of the long, sometimes really hard road to building a successful company. Of course, no two entrepreneurs' journeys are exactly the same, but themes do emerge. One, there's no way they can do it alone. Another is how incredibly important it is for companies to keep their teams connected, no matter where they are in the world. Our sponsor, Atlassian, knows this better than anyone. Their team has spent over 20 years creating software like Jira and Confluence to make collaboration of any size and across any distance possible, because Atlassian believes the best ideas are impossible alone. And look, there will always be challenges with distributed work. Our team here at How I Built This might not be huge. We do a lot with a small group of hardworking people, but we really understand the importance of staying organized and having visibility across the team, especially when we're all working remotely. Having the right collaboration products can make all the difference when you need to move quickly, work efficiently, and make informed decisions. With their evidence-based approach, Atlassian has redefined collaboration for teams scattered across the globe. And if you're looking for solutions for your team, Atlassian's suite of software is the foundation to help make the way you work that much more seamless. No matter where you are, your team can plan meticulously with Jira and create a knowledge base with Confluence, turning ideas into action and brainstorming into breakthroughs. A world where distributed teams sync effortlessly, where the touch of innovation streamlines every project, that's not a dream. It's a reality with Atlassian. Whether your team is spread across the country or even the globe, delivering greatness is impossible alone. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Atlassian. We've all been there. Maybe we used one or two misleading words in a shared document, and then the whole team spends a lot of wasted time trying to get on the same page. But we don't need to make those mistakes. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all of the wasted time and money that goes with it. I spend a lot of time writing. I write scripts, emails, speeches, proposals, you name it. And Grammarly helps me find the right tone. It does so much more than correct grammar. It's almost like a trusted writing partner. And when every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. Teams that communicate better with Grammarly report 52% less time spent writing sales emails and 66% less time spent editing marketing content. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now, picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. There are over 200 classes to pick from, like Anna Wintour's Masterclass on Creativity and Leadership that's helped lots of people learn new ways to nurture talent and make bold decisions, two things that are essential for any leader or entrepreneur. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/built. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/built. masterclass.com/built. Hey, welcome back to How I Built This Resilience Edition. So comedian Samantha Bee has been filming her show from her home and providing some comic relief during these pretty challenging times.
Because so much of your comedy focuses obviously on news and current events and politics, and it is, this is a dark time. I mean, it's been like the king of bad years in recent years. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, you provide us with comic relief. Like, we come to you to laugh. Like, that is what you do for us. But what about you? How do you, like, I mean, do you just have days where you just want to, like, hide under the covers and, like, cry?
Of course. Of course. Oh, yes. I'm still, I do, this is my job. I do a comedy show. I love doing it. In some ways, like, if I wasn't making this show for broadcast, I'd probably be trying to make this show just for myself and my family. So it's a very natural, like, organic extension of who I am. But it's a roller coaster ride. Ultimately, we're very lucky. We're healthy. We're in a house. We're safe. So we're counting our blessings, for one thing. We're working, which is an additional blessing. So I'm, like, really trying to be mindful of all the things that we do have to be thankful for, And of course, we're going through an absolute roller coaster of emotion because we're ultimately human too. And we watch the news. Yeah. We don't watch the news right now because we don't have any power. But I think maybe that's a blessing too.
Hey, you just launched a podcast. What does that allow you to do that you can't do on television?
Well, it's such a long conversation, which is really beneficial. I do interview a lot of people on the show, which I love. I actually just love interviewing people. I truly do. But the show is 21 minutes. I mean, the show itself, the entirety of the show is 21 minutes. So when I interview someone, we talk for half an hour and then we end up using 5 minutes of that whole conversation. So it's also just, it's something I truly love to do. I'll be interviewing people for my whole life. When I retire, when I'm an elderly person in a home, I'll still be interviewing people. Like, I just am so curious about them. So it's really fun for me. I don't find it to be an onerous task to like sit down with a list of people who I really dig and talk to them for 45 minutes. It's great.
On a recent episode, you had the New Yorker journalist Jelani Cobb on, and you asked him if he could go back in time and delete certain social media platforms, which ones would they be? You are very familiar with the pitfalls and the perils of social media. Like, what would you, if you could go back in time and change it, what would you do?
Boy, I would just delete Facebook. I mean, I never was a Facebook person, but it's just done so much damage, not just in our own country, but across the world. I mean, there are countries across the world in which Facebook is like considered to be the government practically. It's the only resource people have to communicate and to understand the world that they're living in. And I think that's very dangerous. You know, they just built a piece of machinery that they really did not understand its capabilities. I've never really understood why it came into people's lives and they were so willing to give it all of their personal information. I've just never understood the function of it in someone's life, and I think it's done immense damage. So I would, that's one that I would really take a look at.
I'm going to combine two questions from Shayna Ingram and Kim Cope. You've got kids at home. How are you and Jason doing with school starting again? And how are you, like, you know, working from home during COVID? And also living from home.
I mean, it is a struggle, I think, across the board. I'm so worried about the fall. Honestly, we have kids in the New York City public school system. They're going back to school in September. Of course, we're very stressed and worried. We trust our school administrators to have gamed out every scenario. And so I'm going to go with whatever their plans end up being. I still think it's a moving target a little bit because it's only August 11th. So I'm not entirely sure that the final decision has been made by any of the school administrators for what's happening in September. I'm going to trust our individual principals. I've got a lot of masks on order. We'll be masked. We'll respect those systems. But I do expect that our children will be going back for some type of blended learning. It's immensely worrying. And it's been so difficult for parents. And I really feel that too, personally.
Yeah. Sam, before I let you go, I mean, when you think about how the industry will change, you know, we've had some people from the industry on, producers, and we had Jeremy Zimmer, the head of UTA, on a couple of weeks ago. Television really is not being made in general. There's a little bit, but in general, it's not being made. There's going to be a shortage of new television in like a few months. But when you think about how this pandemic is already changing the industry and even changing what you do, are there things about those changes that you actually think have been good in some ways?
I think it's been revelatory to realize that we actually could change some pretty fundamental systems within our process. Like we just built the show a certain way, and actually pivoting and doing the show a different way has been fine. And you feel sometimes when you have a system in place that really works for you, that you can't ever make a big change. Well, in this case, we were absolutely forced to make a big change. And some of the ways that it changed were very good. And I actually do think, if I may say so myself, that the backdrop of the forest is very pretty.
It is. It's great.
It's very nice to look at, and it's seasonal. So when the leaves start to change, it'll be very attractive. As for like the industry as a whole, I'm not sure what is good about the changes that will be moving forward. You know, I think there's a way to shoot things safely. I think there's a way for us to return to sort of like quote unquote normal, like regular looking television. And that really probably requires quarantining entire productions together. That can be done. Networks have been through This is unprecedented for them. They've lost so much ad revenue. They're probably going to try and start making shows more cheaply, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they will be great. There'll be a lot of reality in our lives for the next little while. We're certainly all looking back at regular television now and going, look at all those people in a restaurant. Like we, you know, we're watching Tom Cruise movies and we're like, look at that cafe. It's just all breathing on each other. So I do think it'll change the tone of programming, but I don't know what I can say moving forward will be great. I haven't figured that out yet. I'll let you know what the brighter side is the next time I come on.
All right, perfect. But at the end of the day, you have become a better camera operator and sound recorder.
We have become better at that. We've become very good at lighting. Like, we've become very good at harnessing the power of the sun to just make it glow just so, which is always beneficial. Yep. Just very good.
Samantha Bee, co-creator of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, thank you so much.
This was such a pleasure. It's great talking to you.
That's an excerpt from my conversation with Samantha Bee, the host and co-creator of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. To see our full interview, you can go to facebook.com/howibuiltthis. And if you want to see all of our past live interviews, you can find them there or at youtube.com/NPR. If you want to find out more about the How I Built This Resilience series or other virtual NPR events, you can go to nprpresents.org. This episode was produced by Candace Lim with help from Will Mitchell, Tyra Lockhart, Matt Adams, Gianna Capodona, John Isabella, Julia Carney, Neva Grant, and Jeff Rogers. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you back here in a few days. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to How I Built This. It's so important to give children gifts that inspire them to learn more about topics they love. And that's why I love KiwiCo. With super fun science, technology, and art projects, KiwiCo is perfect for inspiring creative confidence and a lifelong love of learning. I've used KiwiCo with my kids for many, many years now, and it's been amazing to see how they've built these really sophisticated engineering projects that have been designed specifically for their age ranges. KiwiCo projects are designed by a team of educators, makers, engineers, and rocket scientists who brainstorm hundreds of ideas to create the most exciting, age-appropriate, and educational projects. And the projects are tested and approved by kids. No crate leaves without their thumbs up. Discover hands-on fun with KiwiCo. Get your first month free on any crate line at kiwico.com/built. That's your first month free at kiwico.com/built. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up to three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus, and for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.